Good day and welcome, Philadelphia and beyond. I'm Tom Donahue for Tom Donahue Reports, Philly Freedom on WFYL Radio. And we certainly appreciate you joining us. This is the Freedom Station, station working for your liberty. And so are we here, and we have for the longest time. Okay, let me just start with a headline from the Washington Post. It's an opinion piece, but anytime you have an op-ed, you generally have a lot of the paper's philosophy infused. This, not so much so. And let me tell you why. Well, let me just read the headline and you'll get a better preview of what's coming. It says, "Here's why Trump's foreign policy terrifies neocons." Now, if you're a neocon, a neoconservative, we're not here to cater to neocons. You might say, well, that sounds like a nice name, neocons. It's kind of like the new conservative. No, it's like war hawks and creating wars and havoc and mayhem. It's about interloping, interference, interjecting oneself into other countries' affairs, okay? And that's why we got into the Middle Eastern wars in the last few decades, is because of the neocons, the Bill Kristols of this world. Now, the writer of this opinion piece served in the U.S. Foreign Service from 1980 to 2015, including periods as U.S. Ambassador to Cambodia and Slovenia. This guy's been around the block. He's worked in Foreign Service, so he knows. And so this piece starts out by saying, and it shows Jeb Bush there, yeah, I'm Mr. Neocon. It says, "Many of my former colleagues at the State Department will be appalled by the assertion, but much of the media fed against," and also media fed angst was the actual word, but there is a lot of anger, there's a lot of angst, and they are against, so you could say the three A's, AAA. "It's about Donald Trump's dearth of foreign policy expertise is contrived. Our cadre of neoconservative foreign policy experts unhumbled after marching us into a reckless war in Iraq and a poorly conceived one in Afghanistan, who applauded as we bombed Libya and bitterly resent our having failed to bomb Syria, are frightened." Yeah, the neocons are frightened, gravely concerned about Donald Trump and what that means for their war games. Well, I'm now talking. It's hard for me not to. That's why I try not to read too much verbatim, because I have to continue to interject. Sorry about that. But not so sorry. "Wisely, they often focus on comments that Trump has made on issues that are less genuine interest to them. From his strident stance on immigration, to his threat to our liberties, to his sometimes deplorable commentary about women and some minorities. But what really troubles them, generally level-headed and unmessianic attitude towards foreign affairs. Trump has no desire to make the rest of the world in our image. He is concerned about the world not making America in its image." Let me pause for a second here so I can clearly state this is my commentary. That's right. That's where America First versus New World Order comes in. That's where nationalism versus internationalism comes in. That's where individual sovereignty versus globalist, elitist, protectionism versus interventionism. Okay? You know, back in the late 80s, back in the early 90s, I was on the forefront, the frontiers of freedom as it related to fighting these big issues, country-threatening issues, sovereignty-stripping issues. All right, so back to the article. "The neocons bemoan Trump's rejection of a global role for the United States, but Trump has no intent to withdraw the United States from the world stage. He only rejects the wanton use of our young men and women on foreign adventures of questionable value. The neocons have two clear foreign policy objectives, and Trump may grant them neither. For many of them, their deepest yearning, ungranted, even in the waning days of George W. Bush's presidency, is an air campaign attack against Iran." You heard that right. Yeah, they wanted to bomb Iran also. Iraq, Iran, Syria, Libya, Afghanistan, you name it. Talk about reckless and wanton and just immoral and unjust and just crazy. That's the neocons for you. And Bill Kristol is one of the leading neocons. Now, Dick Cheney was another. And what they all have in common, almost without fail, seemingly, is that they all got deferments. They all did not serve. They did not suit up. And they did not send their family members. So that's the issue with many of the neocons. Not all of them, but many of them, is that they're very happy to send your sons and daughters. They're happy to send you, your husband, your wife, sons and daughters. Why would they want to shed any blood? Why would they want to get dirty? Why would they want to have to live a lifestyle that is beneath them? Trump does not like the Iran nuclear agreement, but his instinct is to make a better deal rather than attacking. Well, Hillary Clinton has a strong record of supporting the prodigal misuse of military force. Clinton is just another neocon, though wrapped in sheep's clothing, just as some foreign policy issues. Trump is a little more than Bernie in wolf's clothing. But clothing makes a huge difference. Most Americans don't want the United States to be disrespected. They want a muscular military. Doesn't take any nonsense. But they also don't want military adventurism. Trump succeeds in having it both ways. He reassures the United States will be respected, and also they will not employ our troops as cannon fodder on distant battlefields. Underneath all the tirades against illegal immigration and the need to be tough with our adversaries, there is an inward focus. In order to be great again, needs to relinquish its role as a global cop and tend first to its needs at home. By sounding caustic, Trump is able to appear more militaristic and tougher than far more reckless Clinton. Calculating and cavalier, Clinton would agree with her old pal, then UN Ambassador Madeleine Albright. What's the point of having this superb military if we can't use it? ? The stern rebuke to that question, later provided by General Colin Powell, that the military is not a toy, is lost on the neocons and Clinton. Among Clinton's weaknesses, her fear of appearing weak may be her most damning. The second neocon priority? A new Cold War with Russia. Vladimir Putin, unlikely and increasingly uncooperative and antagonistic, admittedly makes this objective more within reach, but Trump might avoid it completely. Clinton repeats over and over that Russia only understands a tough and determined opponent, while Trump may have a more sophisticated and mature approach, far less petulant than most of his former Republican candidates. Trump says he would actually talk with Putin. That takes real courage given the general view among the Republican elites. Contrast that with Clinton, who thinks we should not be talking too much to Putin and that we ought to further expand NATO because, in her view, Russia would be an even greater threat had it not been for NATO expansion. Of course, to admit that NATO expansion triggered the current crisis would be admitting that her husband is largely responsible for it. Trump seems to understand that George Kennan's warning that NATO expansion would directly lead to a more paranoid and aggressive Russia. I'm going to come back with more on this article. I think this is one of the most seminal, one of the most salient articles that represents why Donald Trump is under siege, why Donald Trump is such a threat to the established order, the New World Order. Right back, hold tight. Welcome back, Tom Donahue, Philly Freedom. Tom Donahue reports, putting America first, New World Order dead last, proud protectionist, constitutionalist, defender of our freedoms, freedom forward, liberty lover, and truth seeker. So glad you can be with us today. WFYL Radio is our proud home base station right here in the greater Philadelphia area, and we are broadcasting from the cradle of liberty, make no bones about it, and so happy and delighted to be part of the Philadelphia freedom and culture. Okay, let's jump right back to this article. And let me remind you, in case you're just joining us, I think this may be one of the most important op-eds that I have read or that I've encountered in a long time, because this is someone that's actually within the enemy camp, someone that's within the foreign policy establishment that is recognizing why Donald Trump is such a danger and why they look at him as an endangered species that must be extinguished from the political kingdom. And the reason being is that it's the neocons, it's the Bill Kristols of this world that are so hawkish and wanting, well, Lindsey Graham, John McCain, Hillary Clinton. There's many, many neocons. Some might think the neocons are just on the right. No, it's the foreign policy establishment. It's the Council on Foreign Relations. It is the globalist. It is the New World Order agenda. Is that it's one worldism. There is no loyalty to any given country. And they are above a citizenship tied to any particular specific country. Well, John Kerry, Skull and Bones, Council on Foreign Relations, he's right there with them. So, you know, whether it's a Dick Cheney, whether it's a John Kerry, whether it's a Lindsey Graham, a Hillary Clinton, Obama's just a dutiful stooge, you know, a puppet for the puppet masters. I don't think he really cares that much whether it's a neocon blueprint. You know, he knows who's in charge. I left out a big name that we've been talking about for eons here, and that's Henry Kissinger. Yeah, he's a neocon. Mm-hmm. So this is the ilk that we're dealing with on the left and on the right, that control almost like a chess game. It's a board game for them. It's a video game, although they don't ever have to suit up, and they don't have to serve, and they don't have any... they don't have any blood in the game, okay? There's nothing at stake except your sons and daughters and fathers and mothers, okay? So this op-ed piece is entitled, published, The Washington Post, Here's Why Trump's Foreign Policy Terrifies Neocons, the neoconservatives. And the author of this is Joseph Musumele. Joseph Musumele served in the U.S. Foreign Service, or the Diplomatic Corps. He's been involved in foreign affairs from 1980 through 2015, including periods as U.S. ambassador to certain specific countries. So continuing on with this op-ed piece, this article was published in the Washington Post. Is during an ambassadorial conference in 2014, a former colleague breathlessly characterized the Ukraine crisis in neocon terms as a Machian struggle between good and evil. Such comic book notions now dominate our political discourse, distorting reality and making it nearly impossible to objectively assess complex issues. Trump, for all his bizarre commentary on domestic issues, better grasp the subtleties of global politics and the dangers of thinking ourselves infallible and invincible. It's quite an irony. The ostensibly more reckless, infantile, and inexperienced and bombastic candidate may actually be more mature, level-headed, and reasonable on foreign policy than his critics, who, against all good advice our parents gave us as children, pout and refuse to talk to those they don't like, escalate arguments to violence when they are upset, lack any remorse for the harm caused by their past opinions and actions, and fail repeatedly to see that there might be two sides to any disagreement. This is really powerful stuff. I truly believe, and again, this guy is not a fan of Donald Trump. You can hear some of the words that characterize how he thinks and feels about Donald Trump. But he says he gets it right. Essentially, he's saying that where's the Americanist view here as it relates to foreign affairs and foreign policy? The issues at hand that these neocons want to create another Cold War. And they want to create more hot wars. And they want to continue tinkering. And they want to continue invading. So interjecting themselves, interloping, intruding upon other countries' affairs, escalating conflicts. And much of this comes from a journal called Foreign Affairs. You say, well, what is that? Well, that's the digest that is published monthly from the Council on Foreign Relations. And many times you will see the blueprint for foreign affairs and what the United States and other countries worldwide are expected. That's right. They're going to use undue influence and have expectations of how things are to be mapped out. So they're the architects, they're the engineers, they're the draftsmen. They implement. So they influence, they execute and implement these strategies. There are sanctions, literally and figuratively, that will be employed if world leaders do not, in fact, follow the marching orders of the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, when people say to me, well, what's the difference between the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission? Well, the Council on Foreign Relations deals mostly with foreign affairs, deals more with the geopolitical scheme of things, whereas the Trilateral Commission was set up to be more like the business side of the globalist elite and world order. And but they made it look like the Trilateral Commission was just going to be the United States, Japan, Europe, maybe the Pacific Rim nations. But it really is set up to handle more the financial and the business side of how countries work together and deal with each other. Although it does go beyond that. That might be a more simplistic way of contrasting, you know, these two organizations. But many times you will find that there are many members of the Council on Foreign Relations in the Trilateral Commission. The Council on Foreign Relations actually has more membership, and they also bring in more a diverse group. They're not diverse in terms of socioeconomic status, but most of them are elitist within certain specific realms, such as academia, the media, the military, the political elected class, and then also banking and finance. So you have this confluence of controllers in all these different industries and all these different categories. When I say the political, I'm also talking about governmental as well. So it's not just elected politicians. It can be secretaries of state. It can be people within the State Department. It can be other departments, the cabinet leaders, you know, and of course, presidents and vice presidents. I remember when people thought that Dick Cheney was this great conservative and someone that could be trusted and he would put America's interests first. And then I see this, and you can search this out for yourself on YouTube, but there is a video that shows Dick Cheney addressing, as vice president, the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, Hillary Clinton, you can go and file footage, and you'll see that she's addressed the Council on Foreign Relations. So has Donald Trump hasn't, and Pat Buchanan hasn't, and Ronald Reagan never did, as far as I know. But the Bushes have. In particular, Papa Bush. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think Dick Cheney would have said, "Hey, I got this. Don't worry about it. You know, these meetings are above you, you know, and above your pay grade, but actually your intellectual level." Dick Cheney is addressing the Council on Foreign Relations. I think it was probably taped on C-SPAN. You know, where they figure very, you know, a wasteland. Hardly anyone would see it. When Cheney, he took questions, but one of those questions came from David Rockefeller. And David Rockefeller bestowed the praises on Dick Cheney and how loyal and how embracing, essentially, Dick Cheney has always been of the goals and the policies and the organization known as the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, at that time, I didn't know that Dick Cheney, this was 4 or 5 years ago when I discovered this YouTube video, I didn't know that he was a direct member of the Council on Foreign Relations. I knew that, I mean, he loved war games. I knew that he was one that got 5 deferments. He was someone that refused to sign up, to suit up, to serve in the military, but he was defense secretary. Talk about troubling. I really think if someone's going to be the Secretary of War, Secretary of Defense, which is known in the last few decades as, that they have to have some kind of military experience. I don't really think that's asking too much. Because you can have a Secretary of State, and you can have a Secretary, you can have National Security Advisor like Condoleezza Rice, and there's been many others that have served in that role. Kissinger actually served in both roles, so that's how much influence and control he's had. And I do remember that Condi Rice was mentored by George Shultz. And George Shultz, according to Eustace Mullins and others over the years, he was part of the Council of Five, part of the top five that helped in shaping the world. My larger point was that Condoleezza Rice at the Hoover Institution and at Stanford University was mentored by George Shultz, and he was president of Bechtel Corporation, which they always benefit when you blow things up and you have to rebuild, and that's Bechtel Corporation. Well, he sent Condi Rice to tutor George Bush, and this was an article that was published also by the Washington Post, and George Bush said he didn't know a lot about foreign policy. And so as he was gearing up to run for president, as a two-term governor from the great state of Texas, the Lone Star State, in this article talked about Condi Rice was there to be his mentor and tutor him, actually the tutor as it related to foreign affairs. So that's how much influence these folks have. And even though you might like some of these elite folks, if you're a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, you are at least saying, I am very open to your ideology. I'm very open to your worldview and your designated plans for our country and the world. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily an architect. It doesn't mean that you are you're very high up in that hierarchy. But if you have been asked to join, and you have joined, and you have participated in membership, then I think you are to some degree culpable. And I'm certainly going to be looking at you as accusable as it relates to the destruction of our great country, our Constitution. That's the way I see it.